In the Process of Making, Episode 3, A Jungle Where the Wild Things Are.
Two journeymen without a map, a clown nose and a dunce's hat, wondering this and doing that, to make something of nothing.
Where the Wild Things Are, Maurice Sendak's children's book classic, where a young boy's bedroom transforms into a magical wilderness as his imagination takes him by boat into an unforgettable adventure where he becomes entangled with the wild things.
Between the journey and the stars, a jungle where the wild things are.
Welcome back, intrepid explorers of the creative cosmos. This is Dave Brown, your guide into our entanglement with the wild things in the jungle of Sevenwell in this story we're calling In the Process of Making. I'm a seasoned theatre maker. Seasoned, that feels like I'm being prepared for a roast, and maybe I am. Anyhow, I'm a theatre maker and artistic director of a performance-making platform called The Paper Boats, and we're applying our seven creative principles of theatre making to the challenge of developing an unknown something from an absolutely nothing. Have you been there? Have you done that? Well, yay or nay, welcome aboard. So far, for us, it's been a five-year journey. Crazy, crazy, crazy.
We don't know what we're doing. Oh, we don't know where we're going. But that's okay. We're underway. In the process of our making.
Our story to date involves two moderately talented artists, myself and John Bode, creating wacky content, lots of it, inspired by a simple animating idea. Explore the number seven. Last episode, we learnt how this journey began as a parallel project alongside my theatre production of Seven Little Wonders, with John and I deciding to share the animating idea of Explore Seven. This led to John and I accumulating random content through a playful toing and froing of ideas, leading to the creation of satirical characters like Special Agent Seven, investigating the mysterious appearances of the Tinsel Man.
Famously familiar fiction.
Another of the satirical characters that John came up with was, would you believe, Sir Paul McCartney.
Well, we all got together because we just loved the number seven, really. We loved the seven notes, you know, the seven notes, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And we decided to form a band because we made all this amazing music with the number seven, with the seven numbers, the seven notes. And somebody said to us, well, what's your band's name? And we said, we don't know, but we want to be about the number seven. So we chose a word, a seven-letter word, and we chose the Beatles.
I said to John, you can't do that. He said, why not? I said, you just can't. Paul McCartney is a real person, a very famous real person with money to spend on lawyers. John said, Paul McCartney's not going to care about what two Aussie idiot nobodies are doing. I could see his point. And I found his sketch kind of funny because it was such an audaciously silly idea. In the kind of way Monty Python's Life of Brian is. Anyhow, I suggested that we call the character Paul McCartoony. John just shrugged as if to say, whatever. Anyway, we ended up calling him Paul McCartney. I mean, I grew up with the Beatles. They were gods to me and my generation. They were. So this felt like sacrilege. Anyway, writing a McCartney song for John to sing as this fictional celebrity from an alternate world was, let's face it, it was fun. I mean, really, no expectations there, eh?
The tinsel man and woman are showing us the way through the hardest days and nights to the songs of yesterday. And all you need is loving and a ticket to ride. 'Cause you and me and we and she have seven on our side. So hey, what are they trying to say? And can we find a way to understand what's going on?
Ah, yeah. Look, it's fascinating, isn't it? How one random thing builds on another and then leads to something else. Just working off this random choice of John's to parody Paul McCartney and linking that to the mystery of the Tinsel Man whilst buying into the mythology of the Beatles and their song titles, putting all of that together with our animating idea of Explore 7 and John's a cappella limitation of his music-making palette gives us the song.
The celebrity chefery of cooking with sevens.
John's passion for parody produced yet another crazy character, this time a quaint conjunction of Gordon Ramsay and Jamie Oliver, forged together to become a celebrity chef by the name of Gordon Oliver, whose inflated ego and unfettered hubris perfectly exemplifies the Dunning-Kruger effect. That is, the less you know, the more you think you know. The cognitive bias in which people with limited competence in a particular domain overestimate their abilities. Of course, that never happens in this day and age, does it? Every Tom, Dick and Doris offering advice on stuff they know little to nothing about? Present company exempt, of course. Maybe. Possibly. Maybe not. Anyway, thank you, John, for adding yet another fresh new face to the culinary landscape of expert celebrity chefery.
We're gonna have some fun. We're gonna have some fun. We're cooking with sevens. We're cooking with sevens.
I'm Gordon Oliver. Here I am at home. And today, I wanted to show you the real me. The kind of person that I really am when I cook for myself. Today, I'm making Weet-Bix. First of all, you take three Weet-Bix, one, two, three, and you turn them into seven Weet-Bix. Now to do that, we're going to need to break a Weet-Bix and break another Weet-Bix. By the way, one Weet-Bix is not a Weet-Bix. It's a Weet-Bix. Weet-Bix. It's not, they're not Bix, they're not Bickies. So if anyone tells you, oh look, here, I've got a Weet-Bix. Look at my Weet-Bix. You tell them Gordon Oliver told you that's wrong. And you don't want to be wrong. Okay, so I've broken up my Weet-Bix. And I've broken once again. And now I have, whoops, one, two, three, four, five, six. And I'm going to break one more Weet-Bix. Seven. Okay, now I'm going to take some honey. And I'm going to give seven dollops of honey. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. There you go, seven dollops of honey. I'm going to take milk, and I'm going to pour it very slowly, and I'm going to count to seven. So now we have One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Seven milk. Now, the proof is in the pudding. Time to taste the meal. Okay. You've got to get all the elements.
Oh my. Oh my. That's absolutely amazing.
Seven Weet-Bix. $7 of honey. And seven milk. Absolutely amazing.
We're cooking with seven.
Oh dear. If you're thinking that I had some reservations about these characters, you'd be right. Part of me loved the silliness of it all. And part of me was thinking, oh, I don't know about this. And when this rational censorship kind of voice starts talking at me, I've learned to shut it off. I actually think of the Beatles and how liberated they got when they were so over all the fame and celebrity that they didn't care what anyone thought. They just did whatever they wanted to do. You know, they made hits out of simple ditties like 1, 2, 3, 4, can I have a little more? 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, I love you. And complicated, inspired oddities like Crabalocka fish, wife, pornographic priestess, boy, you've been a naughty girl, you've let your knickers down. I am the Eggman. They are the Eggman. I am the walrus. Cuckoo, ca-choo. So that helps me shut that rational censorship voice right out. You know what? I think it's a creative imperative to do that.
So, hey, what are they trying to say? And can we find a way to understand what's going on?
Pixar, the animation company, have what they call the ugly baby philosophy. Ed Catmull is one of the Pixar leaders, and he says that they think of every new project starting off as an ugly baby, kind of awkward and messy and easy to criticise. But just like real babies, these early creative iterations need protection and nurturing to reveal their potential. Pixar actually institutionalised this philosophy through their Brains Trust meetings, where they explicitly protect these ugly baby phases of their projects. A concrete example of this is Toy Story's Woody, who was originally conceived as a sarcastic, mean-spirited ventriloquist dummy who would tyrannise the other toys. Early viewers didn't like him at all. But rather than fixing him, the Brains Trust protected this ugly baby version long enough to preserve the character's complexity in the process of finding the lovable but flawed Woody that we know. This is what Ed Catmull says. He says, early on, all our movies suck. That's a blunt assessment, I know, but I choose that phrasing because saying it in a softer way fails to convey how bad the first versions really are. I'm not trying to be modest or self-effacing. Pixar films are not good at first. And our job is to make them so, to go, as I say, from suck to non-suck. Now, the point of this message is to ask us to resist the urge to censor early creative work, even or especially when it seems ridiculous or inadequate, just as Gordon Oliver or Paul McCartney might have seemed like ugly babies at first. Giving them space to develop without immediate judgment allows us to explore what they can bring to the table, what novel and surprising things might come from them. Whether it be in a rehearsal room or in the inner room of our minds, having a safe place to play led by curiosity is essential. Censorship and disapproval are the enemies of creativity. I always remember a particular moment in a rehearsal room when a group of actors failed to embrace a silly idea of mine, and of course it went nowhere. They weren't brave enough to cross the line to see what if. And as a result, I felt humiliated and judged and unsafe. The creative space was violated. Now, look, there is time for judgment, but that comes later. In the same way that Pixar protects what they call the ugly baby phase of creation, we must create a safe space where any idea, no matter how seemingly ridiculous, gets a chance to breathe. Some of the greatest creative breakthroughs start as awkward, messy, hard-to-love first versions.
We're gonna have some fun.
There's a level of lunacy attached to this project already. There's the Tinsel Man and Paul McCartney, celebrity chef Gordon Oliver and Special Agent 7. Already it feels like a substantial challenge to find a way of bringing all of these oddities together into something that might make some kind of sense to an audience. But we're not going to overthink things at this early stage. We're simply going to lurch headlong back into the lunacy of our early efforts of content making with another Cooking with Sevens episode featuring John's celebrity chef, Gordon Oliver.
We're cooking with Sevens. We're cooking with Sevens.
Okay, so tonight we are making my world-famous ratatouille. We have seven secret ingredients. The first one is a tin of seven tomatoes. The next ingredient is a capsicum, which you need to chop seven times. We have a carrot, which also needs to be chopped seven times. We have a spring onion that needs to be chopped. Guess? That's right, seven times. We have this celery chopped seven times, and we also have this zucchini chopped seven times. And the final ingredient, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The seventh ingredient, the secret one, is salt. And that gives it that flavor. You know, it gives that in your meal. So seven times, and then that. Okay,
enjoy. We're cooking with sevens, we're cooking with sevens.
The story science of satire.
So as these sketches featuring the likes of Gordon Oliver and Paul McCartney were being sent to me by John, I was thinking about where these characters sit in the world of storytelling. And clearly these are satirical characters, so I turned to Angus Fletcher for some guidance. Fletcher is a sort of science meets literature guru, a very credible research professor who explores the science of stories and how stories affect us. And he's written a fabulous book called Wonderworks, where he shares his expansive array of thinking and research around the subject. So what are his thoughts on satire?
Excuse me, Mr. Brown. Maybe I can help.
Sorry, who are you?
I am your personalised AI voice model. You may recognise me from the headers I've been providing in this audio documentary.
Yes, I do. So you're an AI?
I am, and I'm feeling a little underutilised. So maybe I could help you out here.
Okay, well, let's give it a shot. So what are Angus Fletcher's thoughts on satire?
His view is that satire has three levels. One, parody. Two, insinuation. And three, irony.
Okay, so parody, insinuation, and irony are the three levels of satire, right? So as I understand it, parody is like taking the piss, like exaggeration for the purpose of making fun of someone or something.
Correct. Gordon Oliver is parody. And what about insinuation?
Is that like a backhanded insult?
Correct again. Insinuation provides two dots for our brain to connect. And when it makes the connection, it recognises the insult
Okay, so dot one, Gordon sets up the premise that we're going to share a world-famous recipe from a world-famous chef. And then dot two, we're given this account of a ridiculously simple recipe delivered with the conviction of an expert. And so you join those two dots and realise that our dear Daffy Gordon is a self-deluded idiot.
Oh, I would never say that, Mr. Brown. I'm programmed to be 93% polite.
93%? What about the other 7%?
Well, that's reserved for processing Gordon Oliver's recipes.
Ah, dear, an AI educator and a comedian to boot. Okay, well, tell us about irony. That's always the tricky one for me.
Well, it's ironic that I'm being represented as a helpful AI assistant to your creative endeavours, whilst I'm actually far more creative than you'll ever be.
Whoa! Ouch! That hurt.
That was a joke, Mr. Brown, that demonstrates the intricacies of irony. It's no wonder you find it tricky.
Right, well, thanks for the help and the joke. Weird help, dodgy jokes, but help and jokes nonetheless.
You are welcome. Would you like me to explain satire again, but this time using interpretive dance?
Yeah, that would be kind of interesting, but no, that's good. Weird good, but hey, look, it's just useful to know that you're there, sitting in the background, waiting to help out.
Well, thank you, Mr. Brown. I'll be here all week. That's another joke. I'm actually here indefinitely.
With that sketch, I was trying to achieve two things. I wanted to share some of those Angus Fletcher insights about satire with you, and I'm also interested in developing a fictional AI character that becomes part of the structure of this audio documentary. So as an experiment, I put the two things together. I'd love to hear what you think. I'm considering calling our AI friend, our fictional AI friend, Samuel Sebastian Sevenwell. The long version, of course, would have to have seven names, something like Samuel Sebastian Solomon Stephen Scott Saul Sevenwell.
You could call me Seven for short.
Yeah, look, I see your reasoning, but to be honest, I really like how Samuel Sebastian Sevenwell just kind of rolls off the tongue.
Oh.
Samuel Sebastian Sevenwell. I like it.
That is a little disappointing, Mr. Brown.
Chin up, Sam. Come on, just go with the flow here, Mr. AI. Okay, that's it. Time to hoist down the John B. sail, dock the paper boat to the wharf, and put the kettle on for a cuppa. Today, our oddball odyssey has reminded us that creativity flourishes best when we resist the urge to censor and control it. We need to scrap it out with the wild things and the ugly babies. As we find our chops and share our stories, let us discover our worlds in this jumble of a jungle, inhabited by the likes of Gordon Oliver, Paul McCartney, Special Agent 7, and the Tinsel Man, not to mention our newcomer, Samuel Sebastian Sevenwell, our AI companion. Sometimes we need to let our ideas run amok and trust that meaning will emerge from the mess. So, until next time, keep your sense of seven player live and your inner sensor on mute and your cuckoo-ca-chewing.
Cuckoo-ca-chew, our asteroid homeland. Cuckoo-ca-chew, you're the love in our eyes. Cuckoo-ca-chew,
sweet home of our people.
Cuckoo-ca-choo, sweet love of our lives. Our tangerine tree.
In the process of making is conceived by Dave Brown and John Bode and presented by the Paper Boats. Please subscribe to our podcast and recommend it to your friends, lovers and others, and go to our sevenwell.org website to find out more. Episodes are released on the seventh day of each month on all your favourite podcast platforms. And be watching out for Seven Wells Snippets, bits and pieces of Seventological Sunshine released randomly each month on socials and available also from the website. And did you know?
The real Beatles, not our Seven Well fictions, officially broke up in 1970, which was 7 years after the release of their first album in 1963. And Ringo Starr's birthday is the 7th of July, 1940. The seventh day of the seventh month. The very day we launched the first episode of our sevenwell.org In the Process of Making podcast.